This Voice of the Arts podcast is made possible thanks to Carnegie Museum of Art. You're listening to The Voice of the Arts, WQED-FM. I'm Jim Cunningham. Anna Lapwood is here. She will be performing for the Oregon Artist Series of Pittsburgh, presented at the St. Bernard's Roman Catholic Church, St. Bernard's, I'm told, at Mount Lebanon. And if you'd like more information, you can go to OregonSeries.com. Here's how we're announcing your arrival. The Oregon Artist Series of Pittsburgh presenting Anna Lapwood, trailblazing organist at the Royal Albert Hall and classical music social media sensation, Friday, April 12th, 7:30. Welcome to Pittsburgh. Gramophone magazine said you're the great hope of classical music, the dream ambassador for classical music. We need more Anna Lapwoods in the world today. Thank you for joining us here at QED 89.3.
Gosh, that's a bit of an introduction. It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
When are you planning for St. Bernard's Church? What is the program you're going to play?
It's, as with most of my programs, it's a complete mix of some classics. So we've got sort of Debussy Clair de Lune arranged for organ. We've got the Bach Gounod Ave Maria arranged for organ, but also some of my film score transcriptions. So I've written a suite of music from Interstellar. And that's the music which has sort of gone slightly viral on TikTok and brought in a really exciting audience from there. I've written a new transcription, which I'm playing for the first time this tour, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which is some of my favorite film music, and works so excitingly on the organ. Gives you a chance to show off some of the cool stops, maybe the timpani stop on this organ, which I'm very excited to explore. And then we've got some organ classics in there as well. So we've got Vienne Naiads, we've got a Bach Prelude and Fugue. So yeah, a total mix. Basically me in musical form.
Who should come to this concert?
Everyone! I think I particularly want kids to be there. I always love it when I look out and see a bunch of kids in the audience, because I just think when children hear the organ and when they get to come up close and when they get to press the buttons and see what everything does, they fall in love with it. It's such an exciting instrument and kids really do love it, but they need to get up close. They need to have that opportunity. And in my last couple of concerts, there was a little kid called Lucas, who was 6 years old, and his mum sent me a video of him cheering away. And in the previous one, this little six-year-old girl called Mira, who stayed for the whole thing. And they loved it, and it gave me so much energy, because that's why I do it.
Because I grew up with lessons from the organist at my church, who was also the choir director, and he was a harpsichord builder. I've always been enthusiastic about the instrument and its possibilities, and yet so many people have a negative impression of the organ. They think of it as an instrument for funerals, and that's a shame. You have to come with no preconceived ideas about what the instrument is about.
100%, and I think that's partly why I love doing the film transcriptions, because I feel as if for so many people it's an instrument they will only hear at these massive, sometimes very sad life events, like weddings, brilliant, happy, funerals, really difficult. And so heightened emotions are definitely a thing that people associate the organ with, for good and for bad. And so taking some music that they might know from their more normal side of life, film scores, whatever it is, and then putting it on the organ and saying, okay, so this is a slightly unfamiliar instrument to you, but this is music that you know. See how it sounds on our instrument. That, I think, is such an exciting way to bring people in. And also, I just love playing that repertoire. It's so much fun.
Oh, I want to get back to the repertoire in just a moment, but tell me the Anna Lapwood story. Where did it start for you? You're in Cambridge now, in charge of the music making there.
So I run the music at Pembroke College, one of the colleges in Cambridge. I've been there for 8 years. And I started as a pianist when I was tiny, like most people do. And then I kind of loved just trying as many different instruments as possible. I settled on harp as my main instrument when I was a teenager and was all set on being a professional harpist. I was principal harpist of our National Youth Orchestra. I was completely fixed that was what I wanted to do. And then my mum said to me one day when I was about 14, she said, why don't you take up the organ? And I was like, oh, don't be ridiculous, mum. I already play the harp. I'm going to be a harpist. I hate the organ. It's a stupid instrument. Why would I do that? And then she told me that if you get an organ scholarship at Oxford and Cambridge, you get a grand piano in your room. And I was like, okay, I'll take up the organ in that case. And I found it so hard at first. I really didn't enjoy it straight away because it was a brain exercise like nothing else I'd experienced. But I think that made me quite determined to try and figure out how to overcome that hurdle. And yeah, I then had an organ scholarship. Never got a grand piano in my room, sadly, but had an organ scholarship at Oxford and went straight from there to being director of music at Pembroke and started touring shortly after that and haven't really looked back since.
Now you're on an American tour. How's it going?
It is exhausting. It's amazing. It's such a privilege to be able to spend time sitting with these phenomenal instruments. I mean, every organ I've played so far on this trip, Minneapolis, Boardwalk Hall, the largest in the world, and then Princeton, they are just such joys to play. And I've sat there feeling like a child in a toy shop, getting to play in the real sense and have fun with the music and try and bring it to life in its own individual way on that specific instrument. So this is the halfway point now. We've got this concert and then San Luis Obispo and then Disney Hall at the end.
Where is the largest organ in the world these days?
That's Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City. There's a bit of a debate about this because there's two. There's Boardwalk Hall and then there's the Wanamaker organ in Macy's, Philadelphia. And I think technically because the Boardwalk Hall is only 66% functional, it's a little bit, it's smaller in terms of operational stops than the one in Macy's. But there's this incredible team who are working day in and day out to restore the Boardwalk Hall organ to its former glory. And I have to say, when I was playing there, I found it incredibly emotional. I cried multiple times while I was registering because it feels like you are reminded of the humanity of the organ. Everything that goes wrong, everything that needs fixing, is there's a person behind it who is scurrying around trying to fix it for you. So I would say, oh, I'm so sorry, the E-flat's gone on the harp stop. And they would run in and they would change the magnets so that it would work. And you look at that team and you see the love they have for the instrument and the fact they've devoted their entire lives to restoring it. And it's this reminder of why it's so important that we all fight to give the instrument the recognition it deserves.
Atlantic City has an instrument larger than the Royal Albert Hall?
A lot larger. So the Albert Hall is 9,999 pipes. Atlantic City is just over 33,000. So, yeah, it's vast. And it's also got the loudest organ stop in the world, the Grand Ophicleide, which, when you play it, is like a jet engine. And it had a couple of appearances. And, yeah, the team were telling me that when they tune it, not only do they have to wear double ear protection, so earplugs and earphones, they also have to make sure their mouth is shut. Because if their mouth is open, the sound goes in through the mouth and damages their hearing. Isn't that mad?
Scary. Wow. And St. Bernard's, you said it has a percussion stop?
It does. It has all sorts of fun bells and whistles. I haven't actually played it yet. I'm on my way there now. But it's got all sorts of fun chimes. It's got timpani. I think you can do timpani strike and timpani roll in the feet. And that's always, it's part of the fun of being a touring organist, is taking something like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I've now played on three different instruments here, and seeing how you can bring it to life in a totally different way and say something new with it each time.
Will you have a Zimbelstern at your fingertips?
I think there is a Zimbelstern, yeah. And I think that will be quite fun because the first piece I'm playing is a piece called The Star Fantasy, which was actually written for me by a young Armenian composer, Christina Arikelian. And it's all about the wise men travelling to see the baby Jesus. So at the end, perfect to have the Zimbelstern going over the top of everything else.
So there will be women composers included in the programme?
Yeah, really. I think a huge part of what I do is trying to redress the balance a little bit. I think for a long time I realised that my programmes were just music written by white men. And I think that actually that doesn't need to be the case. So in Princeton, I was playing the Florence Price Suite for Organ. I think I might be doing the Florence Price Elf on a Moonbeam here. I can't quite remember because my program is slightly different everywhere. And the Christina Arikelian as well. There's also another piece that I've been playing on this tour, the Olivia Bailey Limina Luminis, another one written for me. And I think a big part of what I do is also commissioning new music for the instrument because I think perhaps the organ isn't an instrument that composers instantly decide to write for. When you're training to be a composer, organ isn't necessarily one that's sort of on the list of let's figure out how to write for this instrument. So trying to say to those composers, you know what, try it out, see what you think, here's what works, here's what might not work so well.
So your mum said try it out and you went for it. Are we having more women in the world of the organ now? How is the divide between men and women?
I think we're getting there. I find it quite funny when people say, well, you're having a successful career as an organist. That means there's not a gender problem. And I'm like, I think having like a couple of significant female organists doesn't necessarily mean there isn't a problem. I mean, we've had phenomenal female organists throughout history. There are so many women that I look up to hugely. Gillian Weir, Jennifer Bate, Marie-Claire Alain. But I think the problem historically has been that they've been seen as the exception. And I feel as if, certainly in the UK, historically, there's sort of been an assumption that, oh, maybe the female organists aren't quite as good generally, except for the Gillian Weirs. And actually, it would be lovely if people just assumed that someone was good until they proved otherwise, if that makes sense. I think there can be brilliant female organists, there can be brilliant male organists, there can be slightly less good female organists and slightly less good male organists. It's all, yeah, we shouldn't have to really have the conversation about gender, but we're not quite at a point where we can't not talk about it.
You have a hashtag, play like a girl.
Yeah.
And along the way, your teachers, some folks, somebody somewhere said, play like a man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's mad. It was in an organ competition I was doing, and yeah, the adjudicator said that they love my playing, but they thought I should play more like a man. And when I sort of said, oh, what do you mean by that? They said, you need to play with more power and authority. And it's funny, I mean, I was 19, and so I kind of went, okay, that's a bit weird, but okay, and didn't really think much of it other than that at the time, but it stuck in my head. And I started in a very kind of light, jokey way using Play Like a Girl to say, you know what, I'm going to play like myself. And if people like it, if they don't, they don't. And again, what I found really interesting is now 9 years later, the number of people who say, oh, but people wouldn't say that now. It's not a problem now. And yet I get young female organists coming up to me on a monthly basis saying, my teacher said that to me in my lesson last month. And that is still happening now. And I think we have to be so aware of the language we use and the harm it can cause. Even if we don't mean it to cause harm, we just have to be careful about that. And music is ultimately all about sharing your identity, your core identity, who you are. And if we are telling someone that their identity is not correct and that they can't utilize their authentic identity to share music, then there's something going wrong.
A million followers on Facebook. You mentioned film was a part of that gathering. The interest, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. People are really into film music these days. We hear it on QED FM every Saturday morning. We have film music, so there's a big interest there. But what else? Look, you've got amazing charm. You speak right to your fans. Sometimes the camera's right in your face. You have a very natural ability to talk directly to people. Doesn't always happen at the organ console or in broadcasting or anywhere in life.
Well, I think, having come at it from a slightly different route, having not sort of grown up in the choral world, the organ world, I grew up in the world of harp and orchestras and thinking about maybe wanting to be a broadcaster as well. I had my own radio show for a while. So communication has always sort of sat at the heart of who I am as a musician, I guess. And I think what I've noticed about the social media side of things, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, is that we have the opportunity to bring people to sit right next to us on the organ bench through the phone, right? And I think one of the big barriers facing the organ is that often the organist isn't visible. Certainly in the UK, we're often up in an organ loft and you can see the back of the head and that's it. So I think people can lose the sort of human element and they can lose the emotional connection, and we're asking them to just listen without being able to connect to anything visually, which means you listen in a totally different way. Whereas if we can sit them next to us on the organ bench through the phone in the practice sessions and say, this is why I love adding this stop here, all of that stuff, explain why we love it, explain why we're devoting our lives to it, why we're having 14-hour rehearsal days on a random tour, I think people then, they go, wow, that's cool. They come to the concert, and even if they can't see you in the concert, they remember those moments that you've shown them through the phone. And so when they hear the massive tuba come on, they're like, oh, she's going to be enjoying that. And they can remember the humanity.
You share everything. You share your inner thoughts, your feelings, your fears. On TikTok, you had your iPad go blank at a crucial moment right before the moment of the beginning of the concert, you're sitting there in the dark at the instrument and you can't find your score.
Yeah, that was, so I play everything from an iPad. I actually, after that, bought a spare iPad, a smaller one, but so that I have a backup with me at all times. But that was, I was playing for a show at the Royal Albert Hall, and it was with Benedict Cumberbatch. So he was reading a letter, and I was meant to dovetail with the end of his letter. And I was meant to be a surprise. So he was reading his letter. I was in total black. And I was like, I'm just going to check that my score is... And I tried to open it, and my Face ID didn't work because it was too dark. So I was frantically typing my password. And then I open it, and every now and then the app does this thing where it just goes blank and you have to reload the app. And it did that then. And it was fine because I still had time. But it is a slightly scary moment when it just doesn't go quite as you expect. And we all learn as musicians that it's about how you deal with those moments. You don't panic. You just stay calm. Work slowly and carefully to restore it, and it was all fine in the end.
I noticed in the string quartet, the orchestra world, there's still a divide. Some folks use the iPad, others like the paper score.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying in the car on the way here that I still use paper scores for Bach. There's something about playing Bach which feels like it needs a paper score. And also, if page turns go wrong in Bach, then I think it's some of the scariest playing you can do, because so often you're playing these sequences where there are three different options to come out of the sequence. And if you take the wrong turn, you loop back to the beginning of the piece accidentally. So yeah, having a paper score, I think, for Bach, it feels better. But for everything else, I've been using an iPad for a couple of years now. And for a tour like this, I couldn't lug around all the music that I need with six different programs. Whereas with the iPad, I can have everything on there. I can copy and paste scores, I can tweak them straight away, and I can turn all the pages with my face, which helps.
Other TikTok moments or posts on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever that surprised you, that you were amazed at? Joshua Bell says, I wish I'd never played the violin in the metro in Washington, D.C., because people ask me everywhere around the world about it. But things that surprised you from your social media connections?
I think the first massive one I had was when I did this surprise collaboration with Bonobo, an electronic artist who's got a massive following in the UK. So they were doing five nights at the Royal Albert Hall and sold out every night, which says a lot about their following. And I had a rehearsal booked for the fourth night after their show. And so I went in, started my rehearsal at about midnight. They were having a little party downstairs. And when there's the organ playing, the bar shakes. So it's like an earthquake, right? The whole bar starts to shake. So they were all like, what is going on? And there was a screen behind me, so I couldn't see the stage at all. And they all came out onto the stage and shouted up, can you play the Toccata and Fugue in D minor? And I was like, of course, and played it for them. And then said, do you want to come and see the organ? I had no idea who these people were. I was like, do you want to come and see the organ? And they were like, yeah. And it was the trumpeter and the sound engineer. And we got chatting and I showed them how it all worked. And then they said, well, wouldn't it be cool if you joined our show tomorrow? And I was like, well, I'm free. I'm in London. I could come and play. And I ended up, they said, oh, well, leave it with us. Give us your number. We'll see what happens. And I got a text at 6 a.m. saying, you're in. Come and join the show. So it was kind of 18 hours from then to showtime. And I ended up joining the very, very last track. No one knew it was happening. Half the orchestra didn't know it was happening. So it was this massive kind of rave. And then the organ suddenly came in and people lost their minds. I mean, really lost their minds. And I had my phone filming, as I often do, put it online, and I can't remember how many millions of likes it got in the end, but it went really viral. And the thing that I think is most special about it is that I still get people, 2 years later, coming to my concerts because of that one video. People who have never been to an organ concert before, who've never been to a classical concert, and who say, the emotion that I could see you feeling in that one video has made me interested in the organ. And for me, that is the power of social media. And I think we could all be using it in a better way, perhaps, to try and show people that ultimately, when we're performing as a musician, yes, it's about the notes, but it's about the emotion, and it's about the emotional engagement we can have with our audiences.
So often with the organist, we do not see you. You are up in the choir loft. You're behind us someplace where we don't see you perform. But that's the beauty of what you're doing with social media, that people can actually see you often at your console. And you are a compact, petite person, and you have at your fingertips this magnificent king of instruments, the astounding power of your instrument. It's thrilling.
It does sometimes cause problems. I'm 5'3", and I do quite a, in my transcriptions that I've written, I often have double pedaling, but often my left foot is right at the bottom, my right foot is right at the top. And on the wrong instrument, that can be, I would say, actually a painful experience. Certainly on the continent, if I'm playing in Germany in particular, the pedal boards are often much more sort of spread out. They're straight and they're flat. And in order to make that stretch, I'm kind of having to rotate my hips out in a way that it is not comfortable at all. But I think, yeah, a lot of people come to my concerts and say, how do you make so much noise for such a small person? And I have to just remind them that it's not actually me making the noise. I'm just, the organ does that.
There's so many other things I want to ask you, but I know you want to get to St. Bernard's and take a look at the instrument and the registration and start figuring it out there. So I'll just throw out a few other things that I wanted to ask you. Maybe you could pick one of them and explain. Of course, thinking of your pedal work, the fantastic feature of the organ that always amazes people that you're able to, you just mentioned, they get 2 feet doing something different at the same time, in addition to what you're doing with your hands on multiple manuals, keyboards of the instrument. There's that. And then, you did a Bachathon for Zambia. You were helping musicians in Zambia. And you mentioned along the way how you work so hard for young women, for girls in the music world and elsewhere as a social concern. All these things are part of Anna Lapwood, and it is such a joy to meet you. Anything else that we haven't shared that you'd like to comment on?
Well, I think maybe if I just touch on the Zambia side of things, I've been working there for, 10 years now, and I basically go every year, and I teach music for a month. And it is the most humbling and most refreshing and most important month of my year, because I feel like we all live life at a million miles an hour, and we're all cramming our lives as full as possible, wanting to make the most of everything. And there's something about working with the musicians there and being reminded, A, we are so lucky to be able to consider music as a career, because there are so many people in Zambia who would love to do that and live in a country where it isn't yet an option to be a musician or to make money from music. And B, sometimes life can be good if you just slow down a little bit. I think there was a case in point was about 5 years ago when I was there, and I was getting really stressed about a little mini concert we were doing. I just unnecessarily stressed. And one of my friends from Zambia said, "What's wrong? I've never seen you like this before. You always seem quite relaxed, and now you're all frantic." And I said, "Oh, I'm just worried that we're not going to do well in this concert." And he said, "So you're stressed doing the thing that you love that we wish we could do." And that was like someone had slapped me in the face. And now I think of that. Whenever I get stressed about a concert, whenever I get nervous about a concert, I think back to that one comment, and I'm reminded that it is a privilege to be able to do what we do. And I'm not going to take that lightly.
It is a privilege to meet you. Keep doing what you're doing. I enjoy everything you post. There's so much nonsense on TikTok. Really awful stuff that I can't believe I've looked at on occasion. But there you are. I'd rather watch you making your breakfast anytime. There's so much that's happening. And there you are playing a little Philip Glass and saying, oh, it's one of the most popular things you do, and yet it's very repetitive. It seems kind of odd, out of context. But I love all these things that you share.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Well, it's been lovely to chat to you.
Have a wonderful time here in Pittsburgh, and please return soon. Anna Lapwood, you're the best.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
This Voice of the Arts podcast is made possible thanks to Carnegie Museum of Art.